This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Tony Cox in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Congress finally compromises. The president signs off. It's done and over. Not really, but Congress takes a vacation anyway. It's Wednesday and time for a
Satan sandwich
edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. And this week, the president signs a bill to cut spending and increase the debt ceiling, but without much fanfare or a signing ceremony. California gets a new congressional map, and the fallout has already begun. Former Republican Governor Charlie Crist is donating to the Democrat, trying to unseat Alan West in Florida. Some vulnerable Senate incumbents put their political necks on the line with their vote on the debt ceiling bill. Utah Senator Mike Lee says he might support primary candidates against GOP incumbents who backed it, but kingmaker Jim DeMint won't. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Andrew Kohut from the Pew Research Center about winners, losers, and public perceptions in the debt debate. And later in today's program, 30 years of MTV. You can mail us your unforgettable MTV moment right now at talk@npr.org. But first, as we always do, let's begin with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Tony. It's kind of a unusual, a convoluted trivia question, which I'm sure you'll appreciate. Okay, the most dramatic moment of the week in this whole debt ceiling thing was the appearance on the House floor Monday of Congresswoman Gabby Giffords of Arizona. It was the first time on the House floor since she was seriously wounded in a shooting in Tucson in January. And it's probably, as many people have pointed out, probably the only sane moment of the entire debt ceiling crisis. Okay, so there's been much discussion and debate about Giffords' political future. She could run for re-election. She could run for the Senate. I don't think she does, but she could retire. Nobody knows for sure how much she's recovered from her injury. And there's been some speculation about a political future for her husband, the former astronaut Mark Kelly. Some are saying that he might even run for Congress itself. Given that setup, that 20-minute setup, while there are dozens of examples of wives succeeding their husbands in Congress, there's never been a case of a husband succeeding his wife. So the question is, who is the last man to succeed a female family member for a seat in Congress?
Let's give it to him one more time.
No, I can't, because the show will be off the air by then. Okay. No husband has ever succeeded his wife in Congress.
Right.
And so there's some talk about Mark Kelly succeeding Gabby Giffords if she doesn't run, blah, blah, blah. But who is the last man to succeed a female family member for a seat in Congress?
All right. If you think you know the answer, give us a call.
I'm confused already.
Our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. The winner, of course, gets a fabulous no prize T-shirt. So, Ken, we're going to talk winners and losers in just a moment. But the real showstopper, as you said on Monday, was Congresswoman Gabby Giffords.
We all want to welcome back our wonderful colleague, Congresswoman Giffords, here. And with that, I give back.
That was Colorado Democrat Diana DeGette welcoming back Gabby Giffords. Ken, it was quite a moment after all this partisan politics.
It was, because a lot of people have said from the beginning that this whole debt ceiling crisis is a manufactured crisis, that in the past there's been an automatic vote to raise the debt ceiling. But the back and forth, the posturing by both sides, the intransigence from some members of Congress, you know, refusing to do certain things, just got so ugly. And everybody, we're talking about winners or losers, and later we'll talk about winners and losers, and I kind of think it's losers and losers, because I don't think anybody really won. But that moment when Gabby Giffords, I mean, she looked very unsteady. She did not speak. Of course, in the House, you just vote by electronic voting. But the fact that she appeared on the floor, which was unexpected, and you watch it. I was in New Hampshire on Monday, but when I came back, I watched it in the news. You saw like a little ripple of applause, and then there was an ovation. And given what she went through and given what the country went through since January with that tragedy in Tucson, it was a very dramatic moment.
Yeah, it really was. And it was a great juxtaposition, as you said, to what Congress, how they have been behaving badly so far. The question I had, and I'm sure many others have as well, is will this carry on, you know, or will we go back to partisan bickering as usual now that she's gone back to Houston?
Oh, no, no. There's no question about that. Remember, when the shooting happened and everybody was blaming the Sarah Palins of the world, they were blaming the different people of the world, they said, but for now, you know, we've come together. We've realized how tragic this, the rancor and the rhetoric can be. And so we're going to unite as a people. And that lasted probably all of 15 minutes. And so I kind of think that while it was a very nice and moving moment, which it really was, once the vote was taken, that's the end for that long lasting good feeling.
All right. Well, for your trivia question, we have a couple of people on the line who think that they have the correct answer. The first one is John from Denver, Colorado. John, welcome. What's the answer?
I'm going to guess Kwame Kilpatrick.
That's interesting.
Well, Kwame Kilpatrick did replace, well, let me say it again. His mother was member of Congress. Kwame Kilpatrick was elected mayor of Detroit. So he didn't really succeed his mother or anybody in his family in Congress.
John, thank you very much for that.
That was Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick, I think.
All right, let's go to Eric, who is standing by in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Eric, welcome. What's the answer?
Ken, before I give my answer, Ken, I've always wanted you to come on a program for an hour with Jack Beatty. I think you guys are excellent analysts. I'm going to go with Kendrick Meek.
Kendrick Meek is a good guess. Kendrick Meek, of course, succeeded his mother, who was a member of Congress from Florida. But that is not the most recent case of this. Kendrick Meek, of course, was the U.S. Senate nominee for the Democrats in Florida in 2010. Kendrick Meek, a good guess, but not the right answer.
All right, let's take one more. This is Kelly from St. Louis, Missouri. Kelly, welcome. What's the answer?
Russ Carnahan.
Well, when Mel Carnahan died running for the Senate in 2000, Gene Carnahan was appointed to the seat. But again, this is that's a case of a woman succeeding her husband, even though he was posthumously elected in 2000. And then Russ Carnahan didn't reply. Gene Carnahan was elected to the Senate. Russ Carnahan was elected to the House. So Russ Carnahan did not replace his mother in the House. It was two separate offices completely.
Thank you for that call. We got a couple of emails, but they both, the emails that I just received were both of answers that you have already said.
Carnahan is a popular guess, but yeah. But
absolutely. So we got to keep trying.
Okay.
We got to keep trying.
But you know something? Not only do you win a T-shirt for the correct answer, but you do win a T-shirt for solving the scuttle button puzzle. And there's a new one on the NPR website at totn.org. And last week's winner, by the way, the puzzle was with a picture of Neil Conan. The answer was Conan the Barbarian. And the winner was Peter Gillette of Iowa City, Iowa. And he gets a T-shirt. How do you like that?
Good for that. Hey, you know what? Before we go to another caller.
You didn't sound that very excited.
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay,
it's just
right.
I have that kind of face.
Okay.
What can I tell you?
Okay.
Give the question one more time, would you?
The question is, who is the last man to succeed a female family member for a seat in Congress?
All right. Now, we have Patrick from, is it Portage, Michigan?
Portage, Michigan.
Okay, Patrick, welcome to the show. What's the answer?
Is it Andre Carson?
And that is the correct answer. As Neil Carter would say, ding, 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 ding.
Ding,
Yes. But Andre Carson is an Indiana Democrat. Julia Carson was his grandmother, who died in 2008. Andre Carson won a special election and still serves in the House.
That's great.
So Rick wins a T-shirt.
Well, Patrick. Patrick, so hold on. I'm going to put you on hold. Somebody will come on and get your information. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
All right.
See,
nice.
Now you look excited, Tony.
I am excited because I didn't know if we would get a winner for that one at all.
Patrick's the correct answer.
All right. You know what? Let's go back to what we were talking about before. Well, you mentioned Gabby Giffords. And the tone that she set when she arrived. Now, think about the debate, the vote, and then the day after and the moments after when the president, as a matter of fact, the president came out and spoke at the Rose Garden after the bill had passed the Senate, but it sounded like a scolding.
It's pretty likely that the uncertainty surrounding the raising of the debt ceiling for both businesses and consumers has been unsettling and just one more impediment to the full recovery that we need. And it was something that we could have avoided entirely.
That's not the kind of speech you would expect to get at a signing.
No, especially given the fact that, as President Obama said over and over again, this is one of the most important economic decisions and votes in our time. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. We've got to do something. We've got to raise the debt ceiling. And, you know, there's been negotiations going on for months and months. Every time we think we get close, there's been some kind of something thrown in its way. And yet, you know, you think of a signing ceremony as a great victory. You think of, you know, civil rights bills and things like that. But there was no... Look, he's not happy about it. The Republicans who voted for it are not happy about it. Democrats who voted for it are not happy about it. It was one of those things that they had to do. There was an illness. They had to take the aspirin. But nobody seems very happy about it.
All right. By the way, Scuttle Button?
Yes.
We need to tell people that they can go to NPR.org to find out about that.
Go to Talk of the Nation page and look at Blog of the Nation. You'll see this week's new puzzle.
All right. Scuttle Button. That's it. I love that name.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
There's a lot of other things going on outside of Washington, and we're going to get into more detail with regard to how people are perceiving us inside the Beltway. Well, not us, those at the Capitol inside the Beltway when we have our next guest. But what else is happening around the country that really grabs your attention?
Well, there was speaking of exciting, Tony, there was a Mississippi gubernatorial primary yesterday in Mississippi to see who the next governor will be. Haley Barbour is retiring. It's term limited after two terms. Lieutenant Governor Phil Bryant will be the Republican nominee. The Democratic nominee won't be decided until a runoff on August 23rd. But Mississippi was one of those states for years that Republicans never won anywhere, let alone competed. And yet it looks like the Republicans will keep the governorship of Mississippi. Democrats didn't even put up a candidate for lieutenant governor, which may be the first time in history. Big, solid Republican state. Mississippi Mississippi likely to stay Republican. The other thing I noticed was Charlie Crist. Oh, I'm sorry. You have a thing. Yes.
That just means we got to go.
Oh.
And we'll come back and finish this conversation in just a second. We are talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. And when we do come back in just a moment, winners and losers in the debt compromise, we'll ask Andy Kohut with the Pew Research Center to tell us what his surveys show. Stay with us. I'm Tony Cox. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Tony Cox. It's Wednesday, and political junkie Ken Rudin is here with us, as he is each Wednesday. His blog and infamous Scuttle Button puzzle are back. Go to NPR.org and click on Talk of the Nation for those. The story of the week, of course, the debt deal. After the House and Senate passed the compromise bill, they promptly left town. They're likely to get an earful when they get home. A recent Pew poll found that most people describe the debt debate as stupid, ridiculous, and disgusting. The poll found more than 70% of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents had negative opinions of the negotiations. If you watched the debt debate unfold, how did your member of Congress vote, and will it affect the way you vote in 2012? Our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Andrew Kohut is the president of the Pew Research Center and joins us from a studio there. Andy, nice to have you back on the program.
Happy to be with you, Tony.
Before I ask you the first question, Andy, I know that Ken and I had to stop for the break. And Ken, I know you want to talk about the president turning 50 and some other stuff.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, you know, President Obama turns 50 tomorrow, assuming you believe those fake birth certificates. But anyway, he's having a fundraising dinner tonight in Chicago, $35,800 a plate. I understand that the silverware and food might be extra, but I mean, I just, you know, you think of what President Obama's numbers, everybody seems to have been hurt in this crisis, and including President Obama, because if this is the most serious incident since the Great Depression, the economy is in such dire straits, many people felt that, one, he laid back too long in this whole crisis, and if you listen to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, he gave up too much to the Republicans.
So what about it, Andy? What do the people think, not just of the president, but of the members of Congress who held the country captive all this time?
Well, our polling conducted with the Washington Post this past weekend showed there were no winners here. When we asked people, do you have a less favorable or a more favorable opinion of a whole range of players, the less favorables dominated more favorables. Barack Obama, 37% less favorable, only 18% more favorable. And that was about as good as it got. The Republicans in Congress, 42% less favorable, just 11% more favorable. And so it goes with Boehner and the Tea Party. And the Democrats in Congress come off a little bit better than the Republicans in Congress. And these reactions track with the trend in approval ratings. President Obama's approval ratings have been coming down. The approval ratings for the Republican leadership have been coming down over the past few months, and it's not a good situation. This is very different than what we saw back in 1995, when after there was a similar confrontation, and the government actually did shut down. And there, President Clinton's approval ratings went up in response to his standing up to the Republicans, and the Republican ratings went down. But we don't have that here. We have neither side showing signs of getting something out of this politically.
You know, you and Ken, you have looked at these kinds of numbers for years, covering politics here in Washington. What are we to make of this? Is it just because the country is angry and their anger will subside, or is it likely to last, do either of you think?
Well, it's very difficult to understand, especially with regard to President Obama, because in addition to discontent with this whole situation, both from the middle and from, and to some extent, from members of his own party, we have what's perceived to be an increasingly bad economic situation, dragging evaluations of him down. So there are lots of things going on with respect to him, and the alternative party, which does well when the president is not doing well, has not done much for itself. So it's hard to make a projection at this point and say, well, the Republicans are on their way or President Obama's on its way. You know, what we saw back in 95, we had some pretty early signs that that confrontation was going to be good for President Clinton, and it was. He sailed to victory in 1996.
Well, you know, we're going to take a call in a second, but Ken, have you ever seen it quite like this?
Well, no, and we talk about what happened in 1992 when everybody was dissatisfied with the economy, and the first President Bush paid for it with the combined Ross Perot-Bill Clinton opposition. But, Andy, I mean, you talked about the Republican Party being the alternative party. Is there, I mean, we will always get phone calls saying, well, is this the right time for a third party? What did your polling say about that?
You know, we see no indication of conceptual support for a third party. But what happens when we get support for a third party is some person emerges as the third party candidate emerges, as was the case with Ross Perot and to a much lesser extent in 1980 with
John Anderson. And you had
John
George
Anderson.
Wallace in 68, right?
And with George Wallace. So you need a person to become the standard bearer for the notion of a third party. We don't have that.
And you need
so 60, you don't see it in the polling.
And I was just saying, you need $60 million, as Ross Perot had, yet with the $60 million and the 19 million votes he got, he still got zero electoral votes. So it's almost impossible for a third party to break through given this system.
Let's take
well,
this opportunity.
In all fairness to that point of view, I mean, Perot was doing pretty well in 1992 before he had this antic of dropping out of the race when he was ahead of both President Bush and challenger Clinton and then coming back. Who knows what Perot might have done if he had had a steadier approach, let's say.
All right, guys, let's take a couple of calls. We did ask people to call and tell us how their representative voted and whether or not they would support or not support that person in the 2012 elections. Our first caller is Danielle from Woodward, Iowa. Danielle, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm proud of my representative, Senator Tom Harkin, a Prairie Populist, for voting no, as did Chuck Grassley and my House Representative Tom Latham. All of them voted no, but for different reasons.
And so you're happy and you'll support them again. All right.
Yes. Probably. I will definitely hearken. I have a question about why the people's budget put forward by the Progressive Caucus was not even discussed, and I'm infuriated that revenues, taxing the wealthy and those who can better afford it, was not even under consideration, nor apparently will be. And I can take my answer off air.
Danielle, thank you. Do you want to try that, Ken?
Well, it is under consideration if you talk to Democrats. If you talk to Republicans, it's absolutely off the table. And with Congress having punted this decision to a group of 12 lawmakers who will decide how to deal this, get rid of a $1.5 trillion cut in spending, the Republicans will not appoint anybody who supports taxes or increasing revenue, and so therefore the Democrats are not going to appoint anybody who wants to cuts in entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare. So my gut feeling is that the only thing Congress did was punt to a later time with nothing getting resolved and nothing. And it's interesting, as the caller says, you have Tom Latham, a conservative Republican, you have Chuck Grassley, kind of a moderate conservative Republican, and Tom Harkin, a liberal Democrat, all voting the same way, which is pretty remarkable.
Let's take another call. This is Howard from Idaho Falls, Idaho. Howard, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you. My comment is the reason that 70 or more percent of the people are upset with Congress is they refuse to see the common sense answer, which is we're going to need a little bit of Senator Crapo's message, my senator from Idaho, and unfortunately raise some taxes. And the 45% of the people who pay no taxes but are on the receiving end of all of the income taxes that other people pay are going to need to have to trim their budget just like I do when my gas bill goes up.
Howard, thank you very much for the call. Let's sneak another one in there before I have both of you guys respond to it. This is Donald from Princeton, New Jersey. Donald, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Screener asked me, I've been on the road since the vote, and my congressman is Lamar Smith. My gut reaction was that he voted against it, but I must plead ignorance and I might have lied. So I wanted to ask if anyone has called any of the Republicans in the Senate to ask them about the lost revenue due to the lack of a bill for the FAA, for all the suspended airport activity.
Thanks for the call. I don't know that we have the answer to that, Ken.
Well, I mean, again, Congress did punt. There's been a stalemate, mostly on ideological grounds, on the funding for the FAA. There are 4,000 furloughed employees, and basically they are losing, I think, $1 billion in ticket tax revenue. But with Congress gone until September 6th and 7th, that's not going to be resolved for another 5 weeks. So that's off the table completely.
Andy, it sounded like you wanted to jump in there, and I took another call. Did you have a comment you wanted to make?
Well, yeah, I wanted to make a comment relative to taxes. The polls have shown pretty consistently that the public has favored a combination of cuts and tax increases or revenue enhancers or however you want to term it in any number of questions posed in any variety of ways. The one-way approach, cutting taxes, or what we see, which is slashing government, has not been acceptable to the public. So there is this is one of the things that really runs contrary to public opinion to come out of this.
And while you have people calling, the polls showing people want more taxes, you have people like Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, who formed the new Political Action Committee, the Constitutional Conservatives Fund. And Mike Lee has said that Republicans who voted for this project, people like Dick Lugar of Indiana, for example, they could very well be, Lugar will be challenged anyway, but a lot of they're threatening challenges. Primary challenges to Republicans who voted yes on this, even the conservative Republicans who voted for it. So you have the polls showing one thing, and then you have the conservative ideologues saying another thing, saying that you vote for this at your own peril.
Andy, thank you very much. We've been joined by Andy Kohut, who is the president of the Pew Research Center. I want to thank you for the time that you spent and the information you shared with us today.
You're quite welcome, Tony.
Ken, I'm going to come back to you because we wanted to get into some more of the issue of the winners and losers, particularly as it relates to members of the Senate, because we talked about in the intro how Utah Senator Mike Lee is like targeting some of the Republicans who voted the wrong way, in his opinion. Jim DeMint saying, well, no, I'm not going to punish anybody. So where do we stand and who's in trouble?
Well, the Republicans who are in trouble, for at least in a primary battle in 2012, are Dick Lugar of Indiana, Olympia Snowe of Maine, and Orrin Hatch of Utah. We saw in Utah in 2010 Bob Bennett, who is a conservative but not conservative enough. He was defeated by Mike Lee at the convention in a primary battle, although it was a state convention vote. Dick Lugar, who was, you know, the Republican conservatives, even though he's been in the Senate for 35 years, they say that he's Barack Obama's favorite Republican. He's facing a big challenge from Richard Murdoch. But it's interesting, Orrin Hatch, who may face a tough primary in Utah, he voted no to show that he's a true conservative. Dick Lugar said, look, I know I'm facing a tough primary battle from the right, but this is the right vote, and he voted yes. So he kind of waved the red flag in front of the conservatives, saying, this is my conscience, and do what you want with me.
It's Political Junkie Wednesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So what about, we talked about some of the senators who are in trouble potentially, particularly on the GOP side. We haven't talked much about some of the candidates for president and those who are chiming in, even though in the case of Mitt Romney, for example, he didn't have to vote. He offered an opinion, but could that be considered a safe opinion?
Well, no. First of all, you're right. Two members of Congress, Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul, are running for president and both voted no. The problem many people are having with Mitt Romney, at least now, is that he was completely silent during this whole debate. You know, if you're going to be the leader of the Republican Party, and many polls show that Mitt Romney will be the Republican nominee, although I still think this is way too early to be saying that, but if he's supposed to be the ostensible Republican frontrunner, people on both parties say, well, he should be leading, and he did not say anything. He did not indicate at all how he would vote until Monday when it was over, and then he said, well, I would have voted against it because it would have, you know, led to defense cuts, and it opens the door to higher taxes. But the point is, and John Huntsman, the fellow Republican, has made this point, saying that doesn't show leadership. I mean, it's one thing to criticize it after the fact, but where were you when this whole debate was happening? And that's one of the knocks on Mitt Romney.
On the other side of the aisle, I had not heard, and it might just be me, I had not heard anyone talk about a potential challenger to Barack Obama on the Democratic side until this week. I've heard the possibilities of that. Is there anything to that?
Well, I don't think so, but what I have heard, and I just want to do a little P.S. here. I was at an event for New Hampshire Public Radio on Monday up in Plymouth, and it was actually a fundraiser for this project called the State Impact, which will show how local politics affects people and things like that. And the event was at the Flying Monkey, and if that wasn't the most appropriate place while Congress was going on, and they were just livid about this. Nobody talked about that President Obama should be challenged in 2012. But there was a lot, among the progressive folks in the audience, there was tremendous disappointment that he did not, in their view, did not show the leadership, gave in too much to the conservatives. And they may, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to sit home in 2012, but if there's any, you know, given the fact that the margin for error may be much closer in 2012 than it was in 2008, President Obama could have some problem with his Democratic base. I don't suspect many will stay home, but it depends how many do stay home.
Clearly, there is an electorate that is unhappy.
And both sides.
Yeah, on both sides. This email that I'm about to read from Colin in Palo Alto sort of sums up what we have been hearing and backs up part of what Andy Cohut was telling us about the polling information they got. It starts like this. I doubt I will vote for any of them again. The debt ceiling crisis was painful to watch, all the more so because we knew this was coming. When the budget was passed, back before the midterm elections, Congress knew this date was coming, but chose instead to put this off until the last possible second. I would think, tell me if I'm wrong about this, Ken, as we bring this to a close, that this will be one of the toughest times for members of Congress to visit their districts.
Well, they're back home now having town hall meetings. And, you know, we saw the Tea Party in 2010. It seemed like the Democrats were taking the heat. But I suspect both parties can very well take the heat because the electorate, as you said, and as Andy Cohut said, when there were no winners, there were just losers. I think the anger out there is very substantial.
You think people are getting tired of talking about this?
Well, I wonder if the people who listen to the show are, but every time we think we're getting close to a solution and something gets done, the Washington punts. And I think this is, you know, perhaps as ugly as we've seen the mood in Washington and the mood around country regarding Washington.
Political junkie Ken Rudin will be back with us next Wednesday. In the meantime, you can give his new scuttle button puzzle a try at our website, or at our blog, actually. Just go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Ken, as always, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Up next, 30 years ago this week, MTV debuted with the announcement, ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll. The rest, as they say, is pop music history. What is your unforgettable MTV moment? 800-989-8255, that's the number here, or drop us an email, talk@npr.org. I'm Tony Cox. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.